Chapter 42. Beautiful and kind to him, and heard her thrilling voice, so natural and sweet, and such a golden link between him and all his life's love and happiness. Rising out of the silence, he turned his face away and hid his tears. Not, as he told them, when they spoke to him, not that the music was too plaintive or too sorrowful, but it was so dear to him. They all loved Florence. How could they help it? Paul had known beforehand that they must and would, and sitting in his cushioned corner, with calmly folded hands, and one leg loosely doubled under him, few would have thought what triumph and delight expanded his childish bosom while he watched her, or what a sweet tranquility he felt. Lavishing encomiums on Dombey's sister reached his ears from all the boys. Admiration of the self-possessed and modest little beauty was on every lip. Reports of her intelligence and accomplishments floated past him, constantly. And, as if borne in upon the air of the summer night, there was a half-intelligible sentiment diffused around, referring to Florence and himself, and breathing sympathy for both, that soothed and touched him. He did not know why. For all that the child observed, and felt, and thought, that night the present and the absent, what was then, and what had been, were blended like the colors in the rainbow, or in the plumage of rich birds, when the sun is shining on them, or in the softening sky, when the same sun is setting. The many things he had had to think of lately, passed before him in the music, not as claiming his attention over again, or as likely evermore to occupy it, but as peacefully disposed of and gone. A solitary window, gazed through years ago, looked out upon an ocean, miles and miles away. Upon its waters, fancies, busy with him only yesterday, were hushed and lulled to rest like broken waves. The same mysterious murmur he had wondered at, when lying on his couch upon the beach, he thought he still heard sounding through his sister's song, and through the hum of voices, and the tread of feet, and having some part in the faces flitting by, and even in the heavy gentleness of Mr. Toots, who frequently came up to shake him by the hand. Through the universal kindness he still thought he heard it, speaking to him, and even his old-fashioned reputation seemed to be allied to it, he knew not how. Thus little Paul sat musing, listening, looking on, and dreaming, and was very happy, until the time arrived for taking leave. And then, indeed, there was a sensation in the party. Sir Barnet Skettles brought up Skettles Jr. to shake hands with him, and asked him if he would remember to tell his good papa, with his best compliments, that he, Sir Barnet Skettles, had said he hoped the two young gentlemen would become intimately acquainted. Lady Skettles kissed him, and patted his hair upon his brow, and held him in her arms, and even Mrs. Babs, poor Mrs. Babs. Paul was glad of that came over from beside the music book of the gentleman who played the harp, and took leave of him quite as heartily as anybody in the room. Goodbye, Dr. Blimmer, apostrophe said Paul, stretching out his hand. Goodbye, my little friend, apostrophe returned the doctor. I'm very much obliged to you, sir, apostrophe said Paul, looking innocently up into his awful face. Ask them to take care of Diogenes, if you please. Apostrophe, Diogenes was the dog, who had never in his life received a friend into his confidence, before Paul. The doctor promised that every attention should be paid to Diogenes in Paul's absence, and Paul having again thanked him, and shaken hands with him, bade adieu to Mrs. Blimmer and Cornelia with such heartfelt earnestness, that Mrs. Blimmer forgot from that moment to mention Cicero to Lady Skettles, though she had fully intended it all the evening. Cornelia, taking both Paul's hands in hers, said, Dombey, Dombey, you have always been my favorite pupil. God bless you. Apostrophe and it showed, Paul thought, how easily one might do injustice to a person, for Miss Blimmer meant it, though she was a forcer and felt it. A boy then went round among the young gentlemen, of Dombey's going. Apostrophe, apostrophe, little Dombey's going. Apostrophe, and there was a general move after Paul and Florence down the staircase and into the hall, in which the whole Blimmer family were included. such a circumstance, Mr. Feeder said aloud, as had never happened in the case of any former young gentleman within his experience. But it would be difficult to say if this were sober fact or custard cups. The servants, with the butler at their head, had all an interest in seeing little Domingo, and even the weak-eyed young man, taking out his books and trunks to the coach that was to carry him and Florence to Mrs. Pipchin's for the night, melted visibly. Not even the influence of the softer passion on the young gentleman and they all, to a boy, doted on Florence, could restrain them from taking quite a noisy leave of Paul, waving hats after him, pressing downstairs to shake hands with him, crying individually, "Dommy, don't forget me," ... and indulging in many such ebullitions of feeling, uncommon among those young Chesterfields. Paul whispered Florence, as she wrapped him up before the door was opened, did she hear them? Would she ever forget it? Was she glad to know it? And a lively delight was in his eyes as he spoke to her. Once, for a last look, he turned and gazed upon the faces thus addressed to him, surprised to see how shining and how bright and numerous they were, and how they were all piled and heaped up, as faces are at crowded theaters. They swam before him as he looked, like faces in an agitated glass, and next moment he was in the dark coach outside, holding close to Florence. From that time, whenever he thought of Dr. Blimber's, it came back as he had seen it in this last view, and it never seemed to be a real place again, but always a dream, full of eyes. This was not quite the last of Dr. Blimber's, however. There was something else. There was Mr. Toots, who, unexpectedly letting down one of the coach windows, and looking in, said, with a most egregious chuckle, "Is Dommy there?" ... and immediately put it up again, without waiting for an answer. Nor was this quite the last of Mr. Toots, even, for before the coachman could drive off, he as suddenly let down the other window, and looking in with a precisely similar chuckle, said in a precisely similar tone of voice, "Is Dommy there?" ... and disappeared precisely as before. How Florence laughed! Paul often remembered it, and laughed himself whenever he did so. But there was much, soon afterwards next day, and after that which Paul could only recollect confusedly. As, why they stayed at Mrs. Pipchin's days and nights, instead of going home, why he lay in bed, with Florence sitting by his side, whether that had been his father in the room, or only a tall shadow on the wall, whether he had heard his doctor say, of someone, that if they had removed him before the occasion on which he had built up fancies, strong in proportion to his own weakness, it was very possible he might have pined away. He could not even remember whether he had often said to Florence, "Oh Floy, take me home, and never leave me." ... but he thought he had. He fancied sometimes he had heard himself repeating, "Take me home, Floy. Take me home." ... but he could remember, when he got home, and was carried up the well-remembered stairs, that there had been the rumbling of a coach for many hours together, while he lay upon the seat, with Florence still beside him, and old Mrs. Pipchin sitting opposite. He remembered his old bed too, when they laid him down in it. His aunt, Miss Tox, and Susan. But there was something else, and recent too, that still perplexed him. "I want to speak to Florence, if you please," ... he said. To Florence by herself, for a moment. ... she bent down over him, and the others stood away. "Floy, my pet, wasn't that Papa in the hall, when they brought me from the coach?" ... yes, dear. ... he didn't cry, and go into his room, Floy, did he, when he saw me coming in? ... Florence shook her head, and pressed her lips against his cheek. "I'm very glad he didn't cry," ... said little Paul. "I thought he did. Don't tell him that I asked." ... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.